Siodd Jackley, as Bavalia Musa Altica. She Robert a car slack mish. I'm Bob Carro, and I'd like to welcome you to this, the final program in this series of Jackley. And in Jackley this time, on Jackley a Chir Shaw, Goyleren and Asmanin, singing songs from the Isle of Man, but in perhaps a surprising quarter. Lad in Yunuelia J. Jezachton Beggar, a day to celebrate small engines on the Gradle Glen Railway. A slow ruggery uchta fiskan choice, the birthday of a very important author, Thomas Henry Hall Caine. In an interview 50 years ago in 1975, Mona Douglas mentioned how she'd been asked by a schoolteacher in Tyree, whom I think she'd met through the Celtic Congress, to send her the words of the Manx song Ushug Beg Rai, which the lady in Tyree had heard and liked, and she wanted to translate them into Scottish Gaelic. She no doubt taught it to the children in her class, and in later years it was sung at and Maud, and there were recordings made of it by the likes of Anne Lorne Gillies, who used to have a series of programmes on the BBC. However, it seems to have been generally forgotten that it was a Manx song that had made its way to Scotland through the good offices of Mona Douglas. Some years ago, a Manx party visited the Bunscoil Forbal Fersta, the Irish medium primary school in Belfast, and while there they sang Ushug Beg Rai. And in later years, one of the pupils, Grania Holland, recorded her Irish version of it, but she acknowledged that it was a song that had come from the Isle of Man. So, as Mona Douglas said in 1975, whilst we've undoubtedly absorbed songs from elsewhere, it's not been one-way traffic. Here's the Manx Music Development Officer for Culture Vanin, Chloe Woolley, to tell us about some more Manx songs that have travelled some way from our shores. There's a new recording available online now from Culture Vanin of Manx songs. What's the background to that recording?
It was a concert held in Athens in Georgia, USA, recently, and it was a suite of 19 songs under the title This Fair Isle. And this was performed by the Athens Chamber Singers, who were directed by Kevin Kelly. And Kevin grew an interest in all things Manx probably about 10 years ago now. He got in touch with Culture Vanin. He was a music librarian. He's retired now, and I think he just had a simple question about a Manx song that he'd come across in one of their music books. And we ended up emailing for nearly a decade, and he visited the island with his wife, came to Inchcranicht, and over the past few years he started arranging Manx music and Manx songs for various instrumentation and choirs. And he had held this grand concert just a couple of weeks ago in Georgia. And he has given us permission to release the live recording.
So with a name like Kevin Kelly, has he any Manx connections that we know of?
I think that his wife might have done, and that was the reason they were coming to the Isle of Man as well, and why it sparked an interest in Manx music. But other than that, I think it's probably quite a long-distant link, but certainly he's an expert now in Manx music. He's got lots of publications that he's bought and he's used, and he's kept in touch with myself and yourself too. You've given him lots of advice, song lyrics, and he's obviously been inspired and made Manx music part of his life.
Good my Mona. Manx Music Development Officer of Culture Vanin, Chloe Woolley, and the initiative of Kevin Kelly in his arrangement of This Fair Isle, Celtic Folk Songs and Dances from the Isle of Man, for chorus and harp in Athens, Georgia, in the United States of America. A recording of a concert of that is now available online through the Culture Vanin website, culturevanin.im, Culture Vanin, all one word, culturevanin.im. Kevin Kelly conducting his arrangement for the Athens Chamber Choir with Elizabeth Veal on harp.
Every soul is mine.
And chid jeshach bri as veim a jinche sanalion, vashen en mesich Henry B. Lach, as veim a jinche de huna de chrogle de hollow ons per charn. Van lied eder in a chauchen stage in a relichen, shach try, vis fodden a schle in a shen to sly greirish lied cajin. As to sly greid a denk and lied cajin de vei on, lugged out taus a lied eder quilichen ren figel clashen ons regin na Romani. Van a Romani gin a wimid jay cabil de chiarn fenichan as carton. A shen mus a lead vis immerchach eder na luchan jay cart son cabil de be curit eder rock as colchonal trishin grinus. Os manning her a wimid gin jay in lead shen, lead cajin mota de grey, och son bollach tram ghoulish yas, eder kion ghoulish as pert sodric. Van a regin yarn bree gint eg lead tree try. As a bollach tram meg a lead cheddin. Treish ren a troggle a red yarn gus mullach snyal, ren a tshen eg lead tri trai de lie, de cho reymus son reyla er lie, son glacca. A chuns glion graudl, ta red yarn on, as an lead ega dech rai, as gus en da shin gol nish. With a novelty electric tram ride from Derby Castle to Groudl Glen, Manx entrepreneur Richard Maltby Broadbent saw an opportunity to develop Groudl Glen as a tourist attraction, building a hotel there and the much-photographed watermill, as well as developing enclosures with sea lions and polar bears and an aviary and other attractions. 3 years later, in 1896, he also decided to build a railway to be operated by steam engines and rolling stock with a 2-foot gauge. The Groudl Glen Railway is now maintained and operated by volunteers, and amongst them is Alex Brindley. This coming Sunday, the 11th of May, the Groudl Glen Railway is holding a special day, and I asked Alex what people will be able to enjoy on that day.
It's our annual day of getting some of the toys out to play, effectively. It's the Diesel Electric Day, and it started basically as an excuse for the volunteers to get the diesel locomotive, the battery locomotive, out and run it on passenger services, because we have 3 diesel locomotives and 1 battery electric locomotive. But the mainstay of the railway service has always been the steam engines. But as time's gone on, obviously, what used to be seen as dirty diesels and modern electric locomotives are becoming historic items themselves, so there's quite a bit of an increased interest in seeing these vehicles in service, as opposed to just being used on permanent way duties or works duties out of hours, as it were.
Well, even the diesels you've got, there's a peck of age on them. They're about coming on for about 80 years.
Yeah, not far off. I would reluctantly call them twins. We've got 2 Hudson Hunslet locomotives from 1952, they were the ones that really did the backbone of the work for restoring the line in the 80s. They were bought from Doddington Park along with the rest of the narrow gauge railway, which has been sold off secondhand, and that's Dolphin and Walrus. Now, Walrus won't be in service this year. She's having a major rebuild at the moment. We decided to give them a bit of TLC and love, care and attention, because they've got Gardner diesel engines inside them, which, if anyone knows anything about diesels, knows that they will outlast the rest of us. There'll only be cockroaches and Gardner diesel engines left on the planet way after humans have gone. They go forever. They haven't got the love, care and attention that they really deserve over the years. They have been flogged and worked hard. So we rebuilt Dolphin a couple of years ago, and she's now in beautiful condition. And and it was about time we did the same for Walrus. So we launched a Rebuild Walrus appeal. Many people supported it, she's in bits at the moment, ready to be reassembled by the end of the year. And in terms of the other diesel locomotive, many people don't realise it's diesel. It's the locomotive Maltby, which we renamed after Richard Maltby Broadbent, who originally built the railway and was an Onken commissioner and also built the Douglas Head Incline Railway as well. And it was originally called Paracombe, and she's from 1947, but she's a steam outline diesel. So to the untrained eye, she looks like a steam engine in any way, shape or form, but she's actually a Bagley designed diesel locomotive, which we nicknamed the Heidi High engine, because if you were a fan of the comedy Heidi High, the BBC comedy Heidi High, you'd have seen black and white footage on the closing credits of Butlins Holiday Camp at Clacton-on-Sea, and you'd have seen that locomotive actually running there. And it's the same locomotive. She was bought by one of our volunteers many years ago under the name of Paracombe, and she was in quite a dire state. And once again, we had her completely rebuilt and is now in pristine condition, and she will be out in service as one of the two diesels on Sunday.
I mentioned the fact that the steam trains were the original engines that were running on the service, but in 1921, in fact, they experimented with what was probably quite a unique form of locomotion.
Yes, electricity. Now, obviously, the Manx Electric Railway had pioneered the use of electric traction from the 1890s from Douglas to Groudle. In fact, that's what started Groudle off as a pleasure ground and Groudle Railway, and then it continued on to Laxey. But at Groudle, they experimented with battery electric, which was very much in its infancy at the time. And I think it was possibly, we look back with rose-tinted glasses about these, visionary entrepreneurs. I think it was driven by money, that the steam engines by this point had been worked very hard for nearly 30 years, 20 to 30 years, and were needing rebuilds. And they thought, oh, we'll buy some of these cheap electric ones and see if those will do the trick. And they didn't so much. There was a number of teething issues with the early traction, one of which the locomotive Sea Line, because they took the respective names of the steam engines, Sea Line and Polar Bear. Sea Line, there's very few photos of, because she derailed and ended up down the glen. And randomly, we found a wheel from her in the undergrowth many years ago. It's now on display at the cafe. And Polar Bear carried on for a few years. Obviously, the batteries weren't enough to keep going for a full day service. So they then built like a little battery carriage that had to go with it to top up the power. But I think by the end of the 20s, they'd realised that this wasn't the way forward. And they overhauled the steam locomotives. They went back to their builders, and they re-entered service ahead of the Second World War. But the interesting thing about the electric locomotives is that we've no idea how they ever charged them. There is some infrastructure at the very top of the Lencoan Valley, which looks like it might have had some kind of hydroelectric purpose, but there's no records as to how these vehicles were charged, bearing in mind that back in the day of tourism, they were working 7 days a week, from dawn till dusk. It's not like our volunteer line now, which is once or twice a week. But they are a big part of the Groudle Railway history. Now, sadly, the electric locomotives themselves were scrapped. There's a few bits and bobs we found of them, but the locomotives themselves were scrapped. But in the early noughties, we came across effectively a donor locomotive, which is mechanically very similar and made by British Electric Vehicles. And it looked nothing like the Groudle ones, but mechanically it was very similar. So with funding from what is now the Manx Lottery Trust, it was rebuilt to be a replica of the 1920s electric locomotives. Some more modern batteries in it, thank goodness. And she's called Polar Bear, and she does a lot of work for us behind the scenes, because of course she's push button start. There's no 3 hour steaming up of locomotives. So she does a lot of the running errands to the cafe, on works trains as well. But she also always runs the last train of the day. But she'll be out for a full day's service this Sunday, so people get the chance to travel behind a silent electric locomotive, and she's very rare in her own right.
So this coming Sunday, then, the 11th, what time, what when will people be able to go along?
The railway's open from its usual summer season time, Sunday 11 till 4:30. The tea rooms will be open, of course, at the cliff tops as well. So we're hoping for more glorious weather like we've had in recent times. And there will be the locomotives on rotation all day. So if you turn up and buy a ticket, all of Growdle's tickets are ride all day anyway. So if you want to get behind a certain locomotive, well, your ticket will entitle you to travel behind any of the locomotives. And you can just stop and have a cup of tea and a piece of cake in between. And yeah, the steam locomotives will be back in service next Sunday and throughout the season, every Sunday through until the end of October.
Well, Alex Brindley, good eye, Morin. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Alex Brindley, one of the volunteers involved with the Growdle Glen Railway. This coming Sunday, the 11th of May, there's that special event to see the historic diesels, Maltby, dating from 1947, Dolphin and Walrus from 1952, and the battery-electric locomotive Polar Bear, celebrating the locomotive originally developed back in 1921. Til Joran seize gemacht er out Thomas Hall Kane rugget ons Runcorn, a chrel shen ginchen clen skeel. Van Erega John Kane, nechau du as balian alaga. Hyagus lairful as a sen henke quail Sarah Hall, for rugget ons Cumberland. Ni aida rennen mi jail ons lairful de gi in the denked guskilia vachel son of Banishok. Ons lairful vod John Kane gavrige ons corcully yarn ons poort son Mersey Docks and Harbour Board. Maar arn gen over shen ve courage the avrige pert runcorn now in Mersey. As houds ve on shen, henk sere vian tayok ons lairful le shillier. Chouds fe becha boer bedel iawr eg berts the fyr chen. Fasera torach, as trefi o'n shen, dol tajimach von lianw rugitji the mocha, den iaw yrgit. Son the peber yn ei goel fe oru feddyn mach red fud, as mwrso hang John Suskus red erskin y fyrt, as hwg enam shen mor yn bol, as irw y tai, chaw chulu jay van bedel iawr ons y fyrt. As ons na peber yn ei goel shen, hwgge yn iru as yn enam shen mor yn bol fy Thomas Hall Cain Rugget, a chyrraw shen o'ch trwy tachyr, as fy tain y perent yn egyd y ffyr yn slerfwl ag yn tre shen. The 14th of May marks the day of the birth in 1853 of Thomas Henry Hall Cain, who preferred to be known simply as Hall Cain. James Franklin, the online and educational resource officer for Culture Vanin, is also responsible for the website manxliterature.com, which he'd already set up before coming to work for Culture Vanin. And that website includes material by and about Hall Cain. James Franklin, what's the importance of Hall Cain and his work to the Isle of Man and to literature in general?
Hall Cain, I think, certainly is the Isle of Man's greatest novelist and also our greatest and most successful playwright. He was compared to figures like Balzac and Tolstoy in his own day. He was considered to be one of the most important figures in world literature, not just of his age, but for all time. That hasn't really been borne out as we are today, but still his books are certainly the best things in parts that you will ever read of the Isle of Man. They're so evocative, so exciting, so much drama and romance. And they are, in my opinion, the best novels of the Isle of Man, and everyone should read them. Mm. He was selling millions of copies of his books. His books were best-selling in Britain and in America, and they were translated into tens of languages and simultaneously published all over the world. This was a man who was mobbed not just on the streets of London but on the streets of New York. His fame was that enormous. He made an awful lot of money, but I don't think people realise that he made most of his money not from his enormously successful books but from the plays, which often spun off from these books. And these would sell out in London's West End and in New York and on their tours across America and across the UK and beyond. This was the literary figure of the time, and he was proudly and very front-footed about his Manxness. He was the Manx novelist.
How was that received in the island?
Well, anyone who's going to stand up and call themselves the Manx novelist is going to meet a reaction of sorts from the Manx people. He had a troubled relationship, or the Manx people had a troubled relationship with Hall Caine. He was a brilliant writer who wrote brilliantly and imaginatively of the Isle of Man. He lived here, he wrote his novels based upon the stories and the places he knew here. And quite clearly, he loved this place very deeply. But it was very hard to accept him for the Manx people. They saw that this was someone getting above his station. This was someone who wrote coarse books of people who were of the Isle of Man doing things which morally people could not agree with. And he brought in, or his books brought in, floods of tourists wanting to see where his characters lived and did the things they did in the Isle of Man. And this was extremely embarrassing for a lot of Manx people, the idea that these characters might have relationships or might bear children out of wedlock was extremely embarrassing, and especially when you have coachloads of tourists turning up wanting to see where this person lived. Oh, scandalous.
And yet he was accepted enough to be elected as a member of the House of Keys.
His House of Keys episode is a really interesting one. He was swept to victory as an enormously popular vote. Hall Caine was a very wonderful speaker and orator. He must have shone in the election process in Ramsey, I'm sure. But unfortunately, of course, he was going all over the world with commitments and also his writing work, and he had a home in London as well. And so he wasn't actually able to do much work in Tynwald when elected. And when he did arrive, there are accounts of Tynwald being deeply offended by his knickerbockers, which he wore. But he was certainly, there was an awful lot of people who recognised the importance he had for the Isle of Man, even as begrudging as most people were. And I think we're in an age now where we still have this hang-up from that era. We're still unsure about how we should stand towards Hall Caine. But I hope that we're coming to a part of our cultural cycle where we can pick up these books and read them again with fresh eyes and appreciate them for just how good they are.
His output included a lot more than his books about the Isle of Man. How much did he write about the island?
Hall Caine, his first two novels were written of his mother's side of the family, based in Cumbria. But they didn't do so well, and so it was Dante Gabriel Rossetti who told him that he should be the Manx novelist. And he wrote to A.W. Moore and T.E. Brown, inquiring about how he could do this and research and whatnot. And T.E. Brown advised him not to do it. But he ignored this, and he wrote The Deemster, which was so successful that it was soon dubbed as The Boomster. It was so popular. And from that point on, he realised that this was a part of the world which he could write very well and which people appreciated. And so he wrote books like The Deemster, The Bondman, The Manxman, and these met enormous success. These are the ones which his career was really built on. And if you go to his grave in Mackle Churchyard, you'll see the Archibald Knox-designed grave, and you'll see the characters from these books around the tomb. But then in about 1897, he published The Christian, and this was really the point which his first novel about Manx characters, but somewhere else. It was a Manx girl who went to London. And this was where the tide turned against him, and fashions had changed. And so instead of being lauded by everyone, people then enjoyed hating his books. And so for the rest of his life, people enjoyed disliking and thinking his books were old fashioned and silly. And this came to a head with a book which I enjoy most. I think his greatest book is The Master of Man, which was only published in 1921. But by this point, no one cared, really, comparatively. But this, of course, to put it in context, this was the same year, 1921, when T.S. Eliot's The Wasteland and when James Joyce's Ulysses were published, which shows the vast difference of where literature had come to over the preceding 20 or 30 years. And this is why, when he died, he could be forgotten or looked down upon rather than how he was received when he first started doing his books.
Because of the ab reaction to his work, he dropped out of favour, and his books are probably more difficult to pick up these days, but there's still material in them which is well worth reading.
Absolutely. His books are great fun, and I think anyone who picks up his books and starts reading, the general reaction is amazement of, wow, how did I not know this existed before? This was certainly my reaction when I first started reading him, and his books are great fun. And this is shown in the letters of T.E. Brown, and I rather like one from when The Manxman was published in 1894, because he's there as the writer who Manx people generally like, and he's watching the Isle of Man react terribly to these outrageous books being put out by Hawkeyne. And he writes that the dear old Manx people are terribly puzzled, many of them quite outraged. Local colour is knocked to smithereens, glorious smithereens. Anachronism runs riot. Read and enjoy.
James Franklin, go to my board, and thank you very much.
Go to my Edson.
The Online and Educational Resource Officer for Culture Vanin, James Franklin, and an overview of Thomas Henry Hawkeyne, who was born on the 14th of May, 1853. As Shene Vine Clare Shaw's Vine Strain Shorge Shachley. That's it from this programme and this series of Shachley. So from myself, Bob Carswell, Marceau Vompine, Robert Akarslach, Slednyat.